taken seriously by the rest of the world will let this drop?
Why do you think they care about this? Yelled Tucker.
Because your lip is sweating.
Retorted Real.
You are up to your ass in this, Tucker. The general's last words were telling our president to go to hell. Do you want us to report directly to him what we were told? Since it concerns him, he might want to know.
Marks held up a warning hand.
Real, I get where you're coming from. I really do. But don't go there. Stand down now. This is not helping.
Real started to say something and then turned away, obviously furious. Roby said, So, what now? Tucker looked at him. We let sleeping dogs lie. That's it? That's your strategy? Mark said,
I think we need to go wheels up and back to the States. None of what we're doing here is productive.
She looked at Roby and Real.
Pack up your gear and let's roll.
Roby kept his gaze on Tucker. Sir, with all due respect, this is not going away, no matter how much you and the president want it to. So I would respectfully suggest that you have a backup strategy to be deployed when the North Koreans come back at us, and they will. What do you know about anything, Roby? Said Tucker. But his voice cracked when he said it. I know enough to know that this is a potential powder keg, and North Korea has nukes. And it seems like their only goal in life is to kick sand in our face every chance they get. Well, I think we just handed them a great opportunity to nail us right in the balls, and they will. The only question is how. Mark said,
How do you think they will?
Tucker looked at her and then back at Roby. He seemed to be waiting for an answer, too. Real spoke.
They either go big or small. Going big means they launch a missile. Going small means they send out their own team of assassins against a specific target or targets.
Roby nodded in agreement at this. Mark said,
In which do you think it will be? Best guess.
Roby answered, A missile does nothing. They can't reach us or any of our allies. And they've never shown they can deliver a payload.
So small, then. A team sent out against a target.
Said Mark slowly.
But what target?
Targets, maybe, corrected Roby. And if our plan was to take out their leader? There is no way they can do that, Roby, said Tucker. The president is too well protected. Maybe he is, and maybe he isn't. But as all of us know, he almost bought it recently inside the White House. Real added,
And the North Koreans are known for having some of the most ruthless assassins in the world. And like the suicide bombers in the Middle East, they don't mind if they die. I can't believe they would pull that trigger,
said Marks.
We would annihilate them.
Tucker rose.
We'll cross that bridge when and if we have to.
Real stepped forward.
Fine, but let's get one thing straight. You try and lay any of this at our feet, it won't just be the North Koreans coming for you.
Tucker got in her face. How dare you threaten me?
It's not a threat. It's more than a threat, Director. And as you know very well, when someone hurts me or someone I care about, I hurt them back. I don't care what flag they're carrying.
She turned and left the room. Chapter 30
Don't ever let me in a room with that man again, because only one of us will come out alive,
said Real.
And it won't be him.
They were back in the States and in Roby's apartment. I don't want to be in the same building as the guy, much less the same room, said Roby as he moved around the kitchen making them a meal. Real poured out a fresh cup of coffee and leaned against the sink, watching him maneuver pots, pans, and dishes.
You get domestic much?
She asked. I live alone. I can't eat out all the time. My repertoire is limited, but it fills the bill. He held up two boxes. Pasta or rice?
I'm not hungry.
I haven't seen any food go down your throat for about 48 hours. How can you not be hungry? It wasn't like they overfed us at the burner. Real sighed resignedly.
Pasta.
Roby heated some water in a large pot. Real said,
You know this is going to blow up into some huge international incident.
Probably, said Roby, as he looked in the pantry for some marinara sauce.
And they'll probably send us out again to clean it all up.
Roby found the sauce and then tossed her a loaf of hard bread.
Get a knife. Cut this loaf into small sizes and take out your frustrations. Pretend Evan Tucker has been magically transformed into olive bread.
While she was cutting, Real said,
To hell with it. If they ask, I'm not going to do it. Are you?
Depends on what they ask and who's doing the asking. He poured the noodles into the heated water and then cracked open a bottle of wine and pulled two glasses from a cabinet. He poured out the wine and handed one glass to Rio while he took a sip from the other and started cutting up some vegetables. What I know, began Roby, is that D.D. Marx told us to stand down and gave us time off, and I for one can use it. I'm too old for the burner box crap they pulled. And you're not that much younger than me.
In dog years, I'm far older,
pointed out Real.
And that's what I feel like, a dog. An old, washed-up dog.
Roby finished cutting the vegetables and then began to sauté them in a heated pan that was on the cooktop. He took a sip of wine and glanced toward the window where outside the rain was bucketing down. General Pack said, Don't let them hurt his family. Real nodded.
Right. In North Korea, it's guilt by association. The labor camps over there are all based on that. If mom and dad get arrested and sent there, so do the kids. That way they cleanse the generations of undesirables or whatever bullshit term they use.
I know that, but I checked Pack out. His wife is dead. He's over 70. So I assume his parents are probably dead, and he has no kids.
Brothers and sisters?
Not that I could find. The briefing said he was an only child. Real drank her wine down and poured another glass.
I don't know, Roby. That is odd. Speaking of family, what about Julie?
She's not my family.
Close as you've got, I'm thinking.
I haven't talked to her since we left for the burner box.
Time off, like you said. You should hook up with her.
And why do you care?
I like to live vicariously through people more normal than I, which is basically everyone on the planet, present company excluded.
Roby checked his watch. How about we invite her for dinner? You watch the food, I go get her.
You serious?
Why not? She really seemed to like you. Real took a sip of her wine and studied him.
You think?
Actually, I know. She told me she thought you were cool. Real considered this and then glanced at the cooking food.
I suck in the kitchen. How about you call and I go get her while you play domesticated?
Roby smiled and tossed her his car keys. You're on. Julie was available, and Real picked her up outside her townhouse in Roby's car. She slipped into the passenger seat and looked at Real.
So you guys survived wherever it was you went? Actually, the jury's still out on that.
Julie put on her seatbelt as Real drove off fast.
Any fresh wounds?
She asked. Real said,
Only on the inside. Those hurt the worst. Believe me, I know. So how is Roby? He's glad to be back,
replied Real.
I've been watching the news for any global catastrophe, so I might find out where you were. And?
Julie shrugged.
And none seem to match you two.
She gazed out the windshield at the pouring rain.
You and Roby seem tight. We are, or as tight as someone can be with him. Do you have anyone else you're tight with?
Asked Julie.
Used to, not anymore. Because they're not around anymore?
Asked Julie.
Something like that. Roby really respects you, I can tell. I would imagine there aren't many who he does respect,
replied Real.
I bet you're the same. We trained together, Roby and me,
said Real.
He was the best, Julie. I always thought I was, but I have to admit, he's better. Why? The intangibles. On the big stuff, we're equal. Even he would agree with that. It's the small stuff, though, where he gets ahead of me. Sometimes I let my emotions get the better of me. That only means you're human. I wish Roby would let that happen to him more often. He keeps it all inside. Which is exactly what we're trained to do.
Real pointed out.
A job isn't everything, is it? It's not your whole life. Some jobs are. Our jobs are. At least mine used to be. And now?
Asked Julie. Real glanced at her as she steered the car through the wet streets and over a bridge into D.C.
Maybe I'm starting a transition phase.
Into another job or retiring?
Retiring? How old do you think I am?
Real chuckled, but Julie's expression remained serious.
Roby told me you don't retire from the sort of work you two do.
Real glanced at her again.
He did?
Julie nodded.
Well, then it must be true. I've never known Will Roby to bullshit.
Julie put a hand on Real's arm.
But you can make it true. You can be the first to do it.
Real stared out the window at the storm that had come in from the Ohio Valley earlier and looked like it wanted to stay a while.
I'm not sure I'm a good candidate to be a trendsetter.
Really? I think you might be the perfect choice.
You don't know me that well,
said Real.
So why did you come and pick me up and not Roby?
This question caught Real off guard.
He was making dinner, and I'm a crappy cook.
So it was his idea for you to come get me?
No, I mean, yes, I might have suggested.
Julie continued to study her.
So you wanted to talk to me alone. There's no crime against that.
A few moments of silence passed. Real said,
Roby told me about you, how you
made a transition to a new life.
You're way too perceptive for your age.
I'm a lot older than I look.
Julie tapped her chest.
In here. You get that, I know you do. You've had shit in your life, and I'm not just talking about your job. I mean, when you were my age, younger, I can tell. I just can. It was like me, right?
Real turned down a side street, pulled to the curb, and put the car in park.
Roby told me you were super smart and had been through hell, but still, how can you tell?
She asked quietly.
I play my cards close.
It's in your eyes. It's in your skin. It's in how you walk. It's in how you talk. I see it all over you. And I bet you see it all over me.
Real slowly nodded.
You see, Julie, it's just that...
She couldn't seem to make the words come out. It was like a hand was around her throat. Julie gripped her arm and squeezed.
It's just that you're scared. I know you're brave and can probably take down 12 guys at a time.
She paused.
But you're still scared because you're wondering if this is all there is for you.
Real was nodding before she finished. Julie said,
I can't answer that for you, but you can, Jessica Real. You can.
Chapter 31. After dinner was over, Roby drove Julie back home. Real sat down in a chair in his living room and looked around. It was growing late, but she really had nowhere to go. Her cottage on the eastern shore was destroyed. Her property in the Keystone State was gone from her, too. Because of what had happened up there, she could never go back. She had to go to a hotel. She probably would have. But right now she just wanted to sit in this chair, close her eyes, and not think about anything. That was not to be. Her phone buzzed. She looked down at it and then sat bolt upright. She recognized the number. She had not had a call from this person in years, many, many years. Every other time she had answered, she was programmed to do so. Apparently, she was still programmed to do so. She said,
Hello?
A man's voice said, Did you remember the phone number?
Yes. Surprised you still have the same one after all these years.
Federal bureaucracy moves slowly, if at all. I've gotten a few promotions over the years, but the main number is still the same. When the request came through, I told them I wanted to handle it. You were and still are a very special case.
What request?
Said Real. He didn't respond right away. Your father, he finally said. Real said nothing at first. It was like a hand from the grave had just closed over her mouth.
I don't have a father.
I know in every sense of the word except biologically, you don't. But the biological one has asked to see you before he dies.
I have no interest in seeing him ever again.
I thought that would be your answer, and I sure as hell can't blame you.
He's still in prison?
Absolutely, same place, Alabama. And he's not going anywhere. He's currently in the prison hospital ward. Cancer. They can't execute him because of his medical condition. He's terminal, I was assured of that. The man will not be leaving prison alive.
Good. Lethal injection is fast. Cancer is slow. The more pain, the better. Hell is too good for him. Anything that happens to him is too good for him. He was born a son of a bitch, and he'll die a son of a bitch, and he won't have one person to mourn him.
Real's voice had risen as she spoke. I know, but I'm just the messenger, Sally.
That's not my name anymore.
They wouldn't tell me what you changed it to, so Sally is the only one I know.
Okay.
Look, I debated whether to even bother you with this. But I decided it was ultimately your decision, not mine. I made a few calls. I sort of knew where you ended up. Pulled a few strings and they gave me your current number, but not your name. Said I could make one call. It was up to you to answer it or not. They wouldn't have even done that. But I am a fellow Fed. It probably freaked you out when you saw the number.
It did. You know I'm no longer in witness protection. Haven't been for a long time.
I know. But this is the only way he could think to reach out to you. Apparently, he knew you were in the program. It must have come out all those years ago.
It doesn't matter. I'm not going.
No argument there.
How much longer does he have to live?
What? They didn't really say. The doc I talked to said he was bad off, cancer all over him. She wasn't sure what was keeping him alive. Any day now, I guess. And then you can really lay that ghost to rest. Real nodded to herself, thinking about things.
I appreciate the call.
Well, I wish it were over something better than this. You were very memorable, Sap. I mean, whatever name you go by now.
Jessica. It's Jessica.
Okay. Jessica. It's been a long time, but I've never come close to forgetting you. And with all the hoops I had to jump through to even get to talk to you, I imagine you're a pretty big deal now. I'm happy for you. Always knew you'd do something special with your life.
I wouldn't characterize my life as being special.
Well, whatever the case, I wish you the best of luck. And if you ever need anything, please call. I know you're not in WITSEC anymore, but well, I still care about what happens to you.
I appreciate that. I really do.
And your old man can go to hell. Rio clicked off and stared down at the phone in her hand. She was still staring at it when Roby came back. What's up? He asked, taking off his coat and coming over to sit next to her.
Nothing. How's Julie?
She's fine. She said you two had a nice talk on the drive over, but she wouldn't tell me anything about it.
I like that kid more and more.
Roby looked at the phone and then up at her. What is it, Jessica?
I got a call.
From who?
WITSEC.
You're not in the program anymore.
They reached out to me because someone reached out to them.
Who?
My father. Earl Fontaine.
Chapter 32. Roby went into the kitchen and made a pot of coffee. He carried two cups back into the other room and handed one to Real. The rain continued to pour down outside as he sat across from her and took a sip, letting the warmth of the beverage battle the chill in his bones. Your father? Real nodded. Wanna talk about it?
Not really.
Okay. He started to get up, but she said,
Wait. Just wait.
Roby settled back in his chair as Real took a drink and then clasped her hands around the cup. Roby could see that her hands were shaking slightly, something he had never witnessed in her before. She didn't say anything, so Roby said, In the interests of full disclosure, DiCarlo told me some about your past. I know why you were in WITSEC. I know some things about your old man and what he did. Without looking at him, she said,
And my mother?
Roby replied, Yes. He added, I'm sorry, Jessica. She shrugged and sat back, almost burrowing into the cushion of the chair. She drank her coffee and they both listened to the rain.
He wants to see me.
Your father. She nodded.
He's dying in prison, of course. He was supposed to be executed, but he has terminal cancer.
And they can't execute a dying inmate, said Roby. A bit ironic.
He wants to see me,
she said again. It doesn't matter what he wants, replied Roby. The choice is yours, not his. He leaned forward and tapped her knee. I know that you understand that. She nodded again.
I understand that. The choice is mine.
He cocked his head and studied her. And it should be an easy choice. He paused and added, but it's not. She let out a long breath that she seemed to have been holding in, because she gave a little gasp of discomfort.
Easy choices are among the most difficult of all,
she said in a husky voice. I take it you never got to face him back then. She shook her head, drank more coffee down, and retreated into a shell seemingly as thick as the armored hide of an Abrams tank. And hence you want that shot now before it's too late? Hence the easy becomes difficult?
It's irrational.
Half the things people feel are irrational. It doesn't make it easier to deal with. It actually makes it harder because logic doesn't come into it. That's one of the downsides of being merely human. Real rubbed at one of her eyes.
He was an evil man. No conscience, Roby. His greatest thrill in life was to hurt other people.
And he hurt you?
Yes.
And he killed your mother. A tear formed at the corner of Real's right eye. She flicked it away fiercely, even angrily, her hand moving like she was blocking a punishing blow about to be delivered against her. She looked up at him, dry-eyed now.
He was the principal reason I do what I do.
She paused, seemed to consider her own statement, and added,
he's the only reason I do what I do.
Normal people don't grow up to do the sorts of jobs we do, Jessica, said Roby. They listened to the rain a bit more before Roby said, so, what are you going to do? Just let it go?
Is that what you think I should do?
She said quickly, seizing on his words. The only thing I'm sure of is that you're the only one who can answer that question.
And if it were you, what would you do?
She asked pointedly. But I'm not you, he said evenly.
You're not helping much.
I'm listening. I can't make up your mind for you. Not that you'd let anyone do that anyway.
With this, I might.
He drank his coffee and said nothing in response. He watched her as she closed her eyes and took several long breaths. When she opened them, she said,
why do you think he wants to see me?
Roby sat back and put his cup on the coffee table that sat between them. He's dying. Redemption, say goodbye, tell you to go to hell, all of the above. He leaned forward. I think the more important question is, what would you say to him? She looked at him, and Roby suddenly saw a fragility that he had never thought could possibly dwell inside her. She said,
there is no forgiveness. I don't care if he is a dead man.
I can see that. But it doesn't answer the question.
And if I don't have an answer?
Then you don't have an answer.
Then I shouldn't go.
He said nothing to this. Just continued to watch her. She said,
I feel like I'm back in the shrink session.
I don't have the qualifications. But whatever you decide to do, you'll have regrets either way. You know that, right?
No, I don't know that,
she said sharply. In a softer voice, she said,
why do you say that?
Maybe you're not the only one who's tried to come to grips with their past. Her lips parted slightly.
You?
Again, I don't matter in this discussion. Just know that one answer over the other does not equal a solution. It's only a decision. And decisions have ramifications either way.
You actually sound very qualified to be a shrink.
Roby shrugged. You want more coffee? She shook her head, but he rose and got another cup for himself. When he settled back down across from her, she said,
so does it come down to a decision of lesser regrets, then?
It might very well. but that's only one set of factors.
What's the most important one, in your opinion?
She quickly added. Like I said before, if you have something you want to say to him, then okay. If you have nothing in your heart that you want this man to hear before he croaks, then...
But not forgiveness,
said Real.
I can never forgive him.
No, not forgiveness. And you don't have to make a decision now.
They told me he could die any time.
Ruby took a swallow of coffee. Not really your problem, Jessica.
Can I ask you something, Ruby?
Yes.
If I decide to see him...
She stopped. It seemed she was searching for either the words or possibly the courage to go on. Just say it, Jessica.
If I decide to go...
She added in a rush.
Will you go with me? Look, I know it's stupid. I'm a big girl. I can take care of myself and...
He reached over and gripped her hand. Yes, I'll go with you. Chapter 33. The airport was small, and the car rental options stood at one. Ruby got the car while Real retrieved the hard-sided bag containing their weapons. She handed Ruby his pistol while she slid into the seat next to him. He holstered the weapon and said, What are the gun laws like in Alabama?
You're kidding, right?
No, I'm being serious.
Basically, in Alabama, if you have a pulse, you can have a gun. As many of them as you want.
She thunked the door closed, and Ruby started the car. Thanks for the clarification, he said curtly.
You're welcome.
The ride to the prison would take an hour. Real had called ahead, and they were on the visitors list. He gave her a sideways glance. You ready for this?
No.
When was the last time you saw him?
When I was a little girl.
Then he's changed a lot. I mean, physically.
I've changed a lot more, and not just physically.
Decided what you're going to say yet?
Maybe.
I won't ask any more questions. She reached over and gripped his arm.
I really appreciate you coming with me, Ruby. It means a lot to me.
Well, we've been through a lot together. If we don't watch each other's six, who will? She smiled at this comment and sat back against the seat.
I haven't been back to this part of the country for a long time.
DeCarlo said you were a teenager when you went undercover and busted that neo-Nazi gang. Pretty remarkable. And the CIA found out about it when you were in WITSEC and recruited you. Real was silent for a few moments.
My father believed in all that shit, too. White supremacy. There are many things to love in this country. The skinheads are not one of them.
So, your father was a skinhead, too?
I'm not sure he was that specific, actually. He basically hated everybody.
So the gang you busted all went to prison?
Not all of them. The head guy, Leon Dykes, had a good lawyer, and only spent a few years in prison. When I was in foster care, the dad was related to someone in Dyke's hate group.
A guy like that is eligible to be a foster parent? Said Ruby.
It wasn't like he advertised it, Ruby. And it was a perfect way to get teens in there to basically be slaves to their cause. Cooking, cleaning, delivering messages, sewing their ugly uniforms, Xeroxing their hate pamphlets. It was like being in prison. Every time I tried to get away, they caught me, beat me, terrorized me. Dykes was the worst of them by far. I hated him even more than I hated my father.
But you finally turned the tables on them, Jessica, and brought it all down.
Not all of it, Ruby. Not all of it.
She looked down, her eyes closing and her face wrinkling in pain. You okay? She opened her eyes.
I'm fine. You want to pick up your speed? Let's just get this over with.
They left their guns in the rental and cleared the security checkpoint into the prison. The place looked like it had been built about 100 years ago. Its outer walls were stained black and part of the front entrance was crumbling, with rebar exposed under the masonry. There was only one road in. The land was flat, leaving nowhere to hide. Ruby eyed the guard towers set at all four corners. Inside, men in uniforms paced back and forth with long-range rifles in hand. Don't see many escapes happening from here, said Ruby.
Well, if my father had tried, They could have shot him, saved us all a lot of grief.
They were escorted not to a visitor's area, but directly to the hospital ward. When they reached the doorway, Roby said, "Okay, we're here. You sure you're ready for this?" She took a deep breath, but still shook slightly.
"This is crazy. I've stared down scum 5 times worse than his ass."
"Those scum weren't your father." She marched into the ward with Roby in her wake. There was a guard stand blocking the entrance to the area the patients were in. Roby and Reel went through this checkpoint. Roby eyed the name tag on the guard's shirt. Albert. Albert was a big man, he observed, and he looked meaner than he was big. Albert eyed Reel with great interest. Roby saw her gaze sweep over Albert, but he knew she was merely sizing him up in case she had to kick his ass later. Albert said, "What do you want with old Earl?"
"Visit,"
said Reel curtly. "I know that. You're on the list."
"Okay,"
said Reel.
"I'm on the list."
"You know Earl?"
"You said I'm on the list. Do I get to visit him or not? If I have to answer 20 questions with you, I'll just turn around and go back to where I came from."
"Hey, hey, just asking, lady. You can go on and see him, 4th bed on the left."
"Thanks,"
said Reel as she breezed by him with Roby next to her.
"Asshole,"
she said under her breath. She took more steps, counting down beds until she reached the 4th on the left. Then she stopped, looked down, her face a mask of stone. Earl Fontaine was obviously expecting her. He was sitting up in his bed, his hair washed and neatly combed and his face shaved. "Hello there, baby girl," he said. "My, my, how you done grown. Is that really you, Sally?" Chapter 34 Chung Cha was finishing her first cup of morning tea when there came a knock on her door. She rose, padded across the room, and looked through the peephole. She opened the door and stepped back. 3 men walked past her and into the room of her apartment. 2 were in uniform. 1 wore a black tunic and slacks of the same color. Chung Cha closed the door behind her and joined them in the center of the tiny room. "Good morning, Comrade Yi," said the man in the tunic. Chung Cha nodded slightly and waited. Her gaze darted to the uniforms, and she counted the stars on their shoulders, as many as General Pak had possessed. She indicated chairs for them to take, and they all sat down. She offered tea, but this was declined. "Pak," said the black tunic.
"Yes,"
replied Chung Cha. "He is dead. Apparently he killed himself while in France. At least that is what preliminary reports are saying." "He was feeling great guilt," said one of the generals, "for his treachery." The other general shook his head. "It is difficult to believe. His family is an honored one." "No longer," said the black tunic, who was a direct representative of the supreme leader. "His family is dishonored and will be appropriately punished. Indeed, that punishment is being meted out as we speak." Chung Cha knew this meant they were being sent to the labor camps. She did not know any of Pak's family, but she felt empathy for them nonetheless. She knew this order would include even young children, and what possible culpability could they have? 3 generations. The cleansing must happen. But then she remembered something.
"What family does he have?"
asked Chung Cha.
"I understand that his wife was dead, and that he had no children."
"He has an adopted daughter and son. It was not well known. He adopted them later in life. They are both grown."
"But if they are adopted, there is no traitor blood issue,"
said Chung Cha. The black tunic seemed to swell with indignation. "That is no concern of yours. He was a traitor, which means they are traitors. They will be appropriately dealt with."
"Which camp?"
asked Chung Cha, before she could stop herself. The black tunic looked incredulous. "If I were you, comrade, I would focus on things that concern you. I am well aware of your past." Do not give me occasion to revisit it. Chung Cha bowed her head.
I apologize for my foolishness. I will never again speak of it. You are right. It is no concern of mine.
I'm glad that you understand that, said the black tunic, though his eyes remained suspicious.
I was sad to have to report General Pak's treachery to you,
said Chung Cha.
But it was imperative that you knew. An enemy of the state is an enemy of the state, regardless of his exalted position.
Her underlying intent was probably missed by the three men. She was not of exalted position. She had never been of exalted position, and yet she was loyal, to a point, and she would never go back to the camps.
Precisely, said the black tunic. You have done well, Comrade Yi. You will be appropriately rewarded.
Chung Cha wondered if this meant another electric rice cooker, or perhaps another set of tires for her car. Actually, she would prefer a South Korean-made Kia. She had heard such things were possible if the Supreme Leader willed it to happen.
Thank you.
But there is yet another dilemma.
She inclined her head. She had wondered from the moment they had knocked on her thin door and entered her humble apartment what it was they actually wanted of her. They did not have to come here to thank her. They were busy, important men. To come merely to thank her was out of the question. That could mean only one thing. The black tunic said,
We require your services, Comrade Yi, for a very delicate mission.
Yes?
She said inquiringly.
General Pak was not alone at his death.
She sat there, her hands in her lap, and waited for what he would say next.
We believe that two American agents were with him at the end.
Did they kill him? Was it not suicide?
One general exclaimed.
We are not sure. We cannot be sure of that. They could have made it look like Pak took his own life. They are as cunning as they are evil. You know that.
Chung Cha nodded and said,
Yes, I know this.
There was no other possible response a North Korean could make to such a statement and hope to live or remain free.
Pak must have known we would discover his treachery, said the same general. That is why he immediately fled to France on the pretext of a health issue.
Why France?
Asked Chung Cha. The black tunic shrugged.
He had been there before. It was a quirk of his personality that he seemed to like French things. He did not always appreciate the glory and beauty that is his own country.
One of the generals said,
Well, the man you killed, this Lloyd Carson, was British. We believe he was secretly working with the Americans. We had tracked General Pak to the cottage where he died and had it under observation. We were about to take him when those two agents showed up. They had surveillance cameras, but our people were able to avoid them. A single shot was fired. Then, very soon, people came and cleansed the area, more Americans. They were obviously behind all of this, the evil devils.
And what is the delicate mission you wish me to perform?
She asked. The generals looked at each other and then both turned to the black tunic. He, it seemed, had been chosen to deliver the instruction.
We believe that the cowardly Americans sought to actually kill our supreme leader and replace him with the traitorous General Pak. We cannot allow that to stand without a response, a very forceful response. It is imperative.
And what shape will this forceful response take?
Asked Chung Cha.
An eye for an eye, Comrade Yi.
She blinked.
You risk the death of the American president.
Now the black tunic blinked as well.
No. We must humbly admit to ourselves that such a goal is unrealistic. He is too well guarded. But there is another target that will deliver our response just as forcefully.
And what is that?
He has a wife and two children. They must pay the price for their husband and father's evil work. They must die because they are just as guilty as he is.
Chung Cha looked at the two generals and found their features impassive. She looked back at the black tunic.
You wish me to travel to America and kill them?
She asked. You must do so all at one time while they are together, as they frequently are. We cannot eliminate them singly, because the survivors will be forewarned.
And when I do so, and the Americans retaliate?
They are a weak bully. They have nuclear weapons. Well, so do we. And unlike them, we have the courage to use them. They have much to lose. We have relatively little. And because of that, they will turn tail and run away like the cowards they are. You must understand, Comrade Yi, that we desire this confrontation. After all, that has come before. We will prove to the world once and for all which country is mightier. The Supreme Leader is adamant on that point. Chung Cha attempted to process all of this. Once she did, she could see a result that did not mirror the man's words at all. She could see her country literally wiped off the face of the earth. But it was not her place to question such things. She said,
If this is to be accomplished, a plan must be put into place. Intelligence gathered, useful people recruited.
The black tunic smiled. All of what you say is true, and we have begun all of this. We will not strike right away, but when we do, the world will never forget. He added in a patronizing tone, And I know that you are honored beyond words, Comrade Yi, that you have been chosen by the Supreme Leader for such an important mission. I know that if you die in carrying it out, you will die with a heart full of pride, that the Supreme Leader had such confidence in you. I cannot imagine a greater feeling when the end appears. Chung Cha nodded, but what she really knew was that if she were to die for her country, she would not be thinking any of those things. It was easy enough for the black tunic and the generals to send her out on what seemed a suicide mission. But then to expect her to gladly give her life for a mission that might well lead to the destruction of her homeland, well, that was asking too much. The black tunic said, We will keep in touch as things develop, and I will convey to the Supreme Leader your heartfelt thanks at being selected to fight on behalf of your country. Chung Cha respectfully nodded again, but said nothing. After the men left, she went to her window and watched them pile into a small military van parked at the curb and speed off. Once they were out of sight, she glanced toward the sky and saw a storm approaching from the direction of the Taidong. It could not be any darker than her current thoughts. She turned away from the window and went to finish her now cold tea. Chapter 35 Riel stared down at the man who had been a very small part of bringing her into the world. As Roby looked around, he saw that everyone in the ward was focused on the pair. He wondered if Earl Fontaine had earlier announced to all here that his only child was coming to see him off to eternity. He had changed a lot, but not enough to be unrecognizable to Riel. Within the wrinkles and damaged skin and bloated features was clearly the man who had abused her beyond all reckoning, and the man who had killed her mother and so many others. She decided to let him keep talking before she said anything. "I'm so glad you done come, baby girl," he finally gushed.
"I'm not a baby, and I'm not a girl."
"Course not, course not, but you was the last time I seen you, Sally."
"Not my name anymore. And the reason that was the last time you saw me was your own choice. Being murderous scum sort of leaves you with few options. And since you killed my mother, there really wasn't anyone left for me, was there?"
Earl grinned widely at this harsh rebuke.
"Still got the sass, that's for damn sure. Good to see. Choices is right. I made 'em. Now I got to live with 'em. But sure glad you come around. Can go easier now."
"Why?"
"Why? Hell, girl, you the only family I got left. Want to say goodbye right and proper.
Is that why you think I'm here? To say goodbye right and proper? Are you that stupid or egotistical, or both?
Earl waved these remarks off and his grin broadened.
You got every right in the world to hate my guts, I know that. And way back when, you'd be exactly right, I was a bastard. Evil and scum, like you said, but I made my peace, got nothing left, except to say goodbye. So you can hate me, got no defense to that. And you got your piece to say to me, I expect. So it'd be good for you to get it off your chest. See, that was the other reason I wanted you to come. What I done to you? Despicable. Wrong as wrong can be. You can tell me to go to hell, where I'm headed anyway. Thought it might help you, you know, to move on.
And why would you want that?
Asked Real.
Never done nothing for you in your whole damn life except cause you pain. You think I don't know that? This is my one shot to do something other than that. That's all.
Why? To make you feel better about yourself?
Barked Real.
No, it's to make you feel better about yourself. So wail away, Sally, or whatever your name is. It's your turn. Go on, girl.
You think me screaming at you will come close to making things even?
Ain't no doubt about it. It won't.
He paused to wave his hand around the prison ward and then over himself.
But it's all I done got to give you.
Real took a long breath and looked around. Everyone in the ward was staring at her and her father. She glanced at Roby to find his gaze on her. The expression in his eyes was unreadable. She looked back at Earl.
I thought a lot about what I would say to you.
Earl grinned expectantly.
I bet you did. Yes, sirree.
And even now I'm not sure what is right or what is wrong.
Just wanted to give you a chance to make a choice about it, that's all. Ain't no more thinking. I done put to it than that. Never even finished high school. I'm a dumb shit.
They tell me you're dying.
Earl waggled the end of one of his IV lines at her.
Just been hanging on to see you, sweetie.
Well, you can stop hanging on.
She turned to leave.
Hey, ain't you want to say your piece to me?
She looked back.
You're not worth the time it would cost me, Earl. See, to get mad at you would mean I have to think about you.
She paused.
And I don't.
She walked out, leaving Earl looking bemused. He glanced at Roby.
You her friend?
Yes.
She's complicated.
Yes.
You want to say something to me, you know, like you taking her place?
No.
No?
Just die and get it over with. Let the world have a laugh, Earl. Let them have a laugh. You were a badass when you were killing people who couldn't defend themselves. Even in your prime, you couldn't take down your daughter. You were never in her league.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Tell me off.
Yeah, whatever. If I see you on the other side at some point, I'll kill you all over again. If I want to take the time on small fry like you. Roby turned and followed Real out. With a deeply self-satisfied smile, Earl dropped back onto his pillow, closed his eyes, and went to sleep. Real was already at the car when Roby showed up. She said,
Well, that was anticlimactic.
The important thing was you did it. You saw him. You said what you said. Now he's out of your life, forever.
Thanks for coming with me.
On your six, like I said.
Did you say anything to him after I left?
A few things. Like you said, he's not worth the breath.
He was a monster to me as a little girl. Now he's just pitiful. I can't believe I was ever afraid of that pathetic bastard.
That's what growing up does for you. Destroys a lot of monsters.
I guess you're right about that.
She looked off. Let's get out of this hellhole.
Sounds good.
They climbed into the car and drove off. They didn't see anyone on the drive back to the airport. They couldn't have. The long-range cameras were too far away. But they took shot after shot of the pair. More than enough, in fact. And now, it had truly begun. Chapter 36.
Are you still going to be doing your job?
Julie asked. Roby and Reel sat across from her. They had been back from Alabama for several days now, and Reel had suggested taking Julie out to dinner to celebrate leaving that part of her past behind. Finally. They were at the back of a restaurant in Georgetown. There were few patrons in the place, but they still talked in low voices.
At some point,
said Reel. But right now we're taking a break, said Roby. An authorized one this time.
Does that mean your last mission went okay?
Julie wanted to know. Reel and Roby exchanged glances. Reel said,
as well as those sort of missions go.
Julie focused on her.
Are you going to take the time to figure some things out? I think I've got some of them figured out. At least I'm getting there.
Roby looked between them. Am I missing out on something here? Julie kept her gaze on Reel.
Just girl stuff.
Reel cracked a smile at this, but then said,
I understand you were in foster care.
Julie nodded.
Me too,
said Reel.
Didn't really work out for me. Me either.
Reel looked at Roby.
Can you give us a minute?
Roby slowly nodded. More girl stuff?
Something like that.
I'll take my time in the men's room. You know, guy stuff. After he left, Reel moved over next to Julie.
I went to see my father in Alabama. Roby went with me.
Where does he live in Alabama?
Max Security Prison. He was supposed to be executed, but he got cancer, so they couldn't carry out the death sentence.
Julie accepted this matter-of-factly and asked,
What did he do? Among other things, he murdered my mother.
Julie reached out and gripped Reel's shoulder. Reel said shakily,
I can't believe I'm talking to you about this, Julie. One, I don't really know you that well, and second, it's a lot to dump on a kid.
I'm old for my age, like I said.
She waited for a few seconds and added,
Why did you go see him?
He got a message to me that he wanted to see me before he died.
Why?
To try and make amends, or so he said. I didn't believe him. He's evil. He's evil, Julie. And evil never changes. It just is.
Julie had started nodding before Reel finished.
So he didn't want to make amends. What then?
I'm not sure. Maybe to taunt me. He just grinned and was spewing this simpering crap. I think it was his last shot at me before he croaked.
An evil man killed my parents,
said Julie.
Roby knows about it. He stopped the man from killing me.
I'm glad he was there for you, Julie.
I'm glad he was there for you, too.
I guess we're both lucky to have him.
But watch out for Super Agent Nicole Vance. She's got a thing for him. He won't believe me when I tell him, but that's because despite all the cool stuff he can do, he's just a clueless guy when it comes to women.
Reel smiled and then laughed.
I've never heard you laugh before,
said Julie.
I don't do it very often,
replied Reel.
But it felt really good.
Which logically means you should try and do it more often.
I'm not sure logic has much to do with it.
The two sat in silence for a minute.
So you went into foster care after what happened to your mom?
Reel nodded.
But not for long. I got mixed up with some really bad people. Not my fault. They were involved with my foster parents. I didn't want to be part of it, so I worked with the FBI to bring them down.
The FBI? How old were you?
Not much older than you.
Weren't you scared?
Every minute of every day, but there was no alternative. The FBI finally busted them, and I got put in witness protection. From there, I went to CIA. That's my whole life in a nutshell. And for the record, only a handful of people know.
Then I'm flattered you trust me enough to tell me.
I don't trust easily.
Neither do I,
said Julie.
But I trust you.
A minute later, Roby returned to the table and sat down. He found both women looking at him so intently that he finally said, What?
Nothing,
they both said together, though Julie giggled and Reel snorted. They drove Julie home and watched her go inside. When the door closed behind her, Reel said,
That is one special young woman.
I got that a long time ago. You two really seem to have hit it off.
We're a lot alike in many ways. When I first saw her, you know what I thought?
What?
That she could be me, only 20-some years younger.
Rio gazed out the window.
And I thought something else.
What was that?
She might make a great recruit for the agency.
Not what we do. Rio glanced at him and then shrugged.
Maybe not. But she's got the brains and the intuition to excel as an analyst. She could serve her country well.
Maybe. But that's up to her.
What, like it was up to us?
We had choices.
We had bad choices, Roby, and we picked one, or at least I did. You know far more about my past than I know about yours. In fact, I know nothing of your past.
You know some of it, he corrected.
Some.
She agreed.
But far from all.
There's not much to tell, hardly worth listening to.
And how much of that was a lie? All of it or just most?
I don't look back. I look forward.
I looked back in Alabama.
But not for long. Now you can look forward.
And it's scaring the crap out of me, my future.
When they got back to Roby's apartment, Roby made some tea for himself, and at her request, poured out a tumbler of scotch for Real. They sat and talked until it grew quite late.
I need to find a place to live,
Real said, as she took a last sip of her drink. You're welcome to stay here until you do.
I'm not sure how well that would work.
Why not? We just bunked together at the burner for way too long.
There were cameras there, people watching.
He looked at her curiously. Not getting your point.
I propositioned you on a flight one time, Roby, and got turned down. I don't like getting turned down. It hurts my pride. I'll try again. It's just how I'm wired.
Roby stared at her. The refusal had nothing to do with you. I explained that.
Exactly. That's looking in the past. You said we needed to look to the future.
She rose and held out her hand.
How about we try this again?
Are you sure about this?
No, but I want to do it anyway.
Roby was about to stand when his phone buzzed.
Shit,
exclaimed Real.
I don't care if that's Marx, Tucker, or the president himself. Don't answer it.
Roby looked at the phone screen. It's Nicole Vance.
Then really don't answer it.
Roby clicked a key and said, What's up? He grinned at Real, who was making a slicing motion with her finger across her neck. Then Roby's grin disappeared. On my way. He clicked off and looked at Real, who was now looking deadly serious.
What?
It's Julie. Real's mouth sagged.
Julie? What happened?
She's been taken. Chapter 37 Nicole Vance met them outside the townhouse where only hours before Roby and Real had dropped off Julie. Police cars lined the street, and Roby could see FBI wheels parked along the curb. Yellow tape was up everywhere, and police officers were holding back curious folks who craned their necks and jostled their neighbors trying to see. What happened? Roby asked. Vance looked at Real, and then at Roby.
Were you two together when I called you?
Yes, said Roby. We'd just taken Julie to dinner and dropped her off. We watched her go inside. Everything seemed fine.
Well, it wasn't,
replied Vance, with another sharp glance at Real.
Jerome Cassidy managed to call the police.
Managed? Said Roby.
They nearly killed him. I wonder now why they didn't. The cops in turn called us because it was a kidnapping. We have an Amber Alert out, but nothing so far. How did they get to her?
Asked Real.
Apparently they were waiting for her when she got home. Cassidy was already unconscious.
So they broke into the house after we picked Julie up, said Roby slowly.
Apparently so,
replied Vance.
They subdued Cassidy and then waited for her to return.
Real added,
That meant they were watching Julie's house. Looks to be the case,
said Vance.
We know she might have some enemies.
She added, looking at Roby. Roby briefly returned the stare and then looked away, his gut suddenly full of acid.
Any clues to who might have taken her?
Asked Real.
Forensics team is going over everything right now. Cassidy might be some help once the docs sort him out, but I'm not holding out much hope.
Cops say he was pretty garbled when he called 911. And I doubt they left a business card with helpful contact information.
Real nodded and glanced at Roby, but her gaze shot back to Vance with the woman's next words.
Julie's phone was left behind. She didn't drop it. It was on the table in the foyer, like they meant for us to find it. There was a text on it. From the timestamp, it had to have been sent about the time she was taken. They turned off the auto lock on the phone so we could access it when we got here. It wasn't addressed to Julie, but to somebody called Sally Fontaine.
Real and Roby exchanged a significant glance that Vance did not see because at that moment one of her men came up to her to deliver a report. Vance finished with him and turned back to the pair.
You said you had dinner with her. Did she say anything that would make you believe she was nervous or scared?
No, said Roby, in a distracted tone. Quite the opposite.
Did you see anybody following you? Not that we noticed,
said Real.
But they wouldn't have to follow us if they knew where we'd picked Julie up from. They just had to wait for us to bring her back. That's true,
said Vance wearily.
Poor kid, she's been through so much hell already. You'd think she'd catch a break.
Roby said, any leads on this Sally Fontaine person? Can you trace where the text came from?
Nothing so far, but we're working on both right now.
Why did you call me? Asked Roby.
It was Julie, I thought you'd want to know. And we looked at a phone calendar. You were listed on there for tonight. Didn't know it was dinner, but I figured if you had seen her, you might have something useful.
I'm sorry that I don't, replied Roby. He eyed Vance wearily. You want some help on this?
Official or unofficial?
I think it's going to have to be the latter. She considered this.
I'm okay with that. So long as you are completely upfront with me about anything you find, I'll do my utmost to respond in kind.
Real said,
didn't know the Bureau was so cooperative. Oh, we can be,
retorted Vance.
So long as we're accorded respect.
Real nodded at this but said nothing. Her mind was evidently elsewhere. Then she said,
the text to this Sally Fontaine, what did it say?
Vance shrugged.
Don't know. Why not? It's apparently written in code. At least, it made no sense to any of us.
Can we see it? Asked Roby, after Real gave him a sharp look.
Why, are you guys code breakers?
I've got some experience with it, said Roby.
Well, I guess it can't hurt.
Vance made a call, and about 15 minutes later, one of the agents brought her a written copy of the text. The phone itself is already tagged and bagged, and in the Bureau's evidence truck. Real glanced at the paper but showed no reaction. Roby said, we'll take a look at this and get back to you with anything we might have.
So you two are a team again?
Asked Vance.
Of sorts,
answered Real.
How about that?
Said Vance without a trace of enthusiasm. Roby said hurriedly, we'll be in touch. He took Real by the elbow and turned her away from Vance and ushered her down the street. He looked back once to see Vance staring at them. Real did not speak until they got back to the car. They climbed in and she held up the paper. Sally Fontaine, said Roby.
They took her because of me,
said Real, and her voice trembled as she said this. You couldn't have known, Jessica.
The hell I couldn't. It was a setup, Roby, clear and simple.
Your father?
Wanting me to come and see him so he could say goodbye? What bullshit! Was I a damn idiot?
She slammed her fist against the dashboard.
Shit!
She screamed in fury. He was dying all alone in a prison he'd been in for 20 years. Not the sort of guy you worry about. She held up the page again.
He wasn't alone, Roby. He got me down there for a reason.
She added dully.
And this tells me why.
You can read that code?
I helped